Good afternoon. Welcome to Leather and Limits. This is episode 37. It is Sunday, March the 2nd. With me, as always, is Imperatrix Knox.
Hello.
And a very special guest for his first time ever, Mikey. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
So, what we normally...
Mikey.
Wow.
Just very
Mikey
simple.
Mikey now. Okay.
Mikey now. Could be worse.
Fantalized.
Listen, there's a lot of other things he could be called, and I'm not doing it right now, but moving on. So Mike, normally when we join someone new on the podcast, we ask them to give a little bit of their own story about how they got on their journey.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Started out with real simple stuff. Always escalates from, minor spanking, and then you kind of say, hey, I really like that, and you work your way up the ladder and find different things that interest you. And for me, I'm more or less self-taught in the things that I practice, and just kind of learn everything I can, soak it up, and rinse and repeat.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I get it.
So today's episode is needle play, better known as stabbing things. Well, a form of stabbing things.
Oh, stabbing people. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know what? I'm not getting into that semantic argument on a podcast. It may be say to Sunday, but not for that.
Yeah.
So for those that are listening in who may have lived under a rock or, maybe that's their first experience with BDSM in the first place. Needle play is a edge play category kink for most. I know there's people that could debate that, but honestly, it goes squarely in the edge play category in that we're talking about a risk of bloodborne pathogens, injuries, fatal injuries, if not careful. Actual scarring, permanent, markings of all kinds. Yeah. The risk profile is much higher than, say, an impact game.
I agree.
Frequently uses hypodermic needles, surgical needles in certain cases. And we'll cover that at one point, but hypodermic is the norm just because of the smaller gauges. It also is often seen as art. It can be seen as sensation play. Blood play is definitely an adjacent category that is often tied in because one way or the other, you're going to have blood for obvious reasons with piercing skin. So you laugh, but you never know. There's someone out there who's like, I didn't know blood was going to happen. Well, if you stick a sharp object under the skin, if it doesn't bleed, you should probably be concerned. But that's another whole podcast we're not getting into today. That's for Conspiracy Theories 101. Moving on.
That'd be a whole nother episode.
Right. Oh, God. I'm not even going there right now. So I'm going to put this question up around the room because I'm curious, and I'll answer it myself, too. But in your mind, let's start with you, Mike, because you're the guest for the day. What would you, if you could sum up needle play in three words or so, what would they be and why?
Crazy endorphin rush.
I can appreciate that.
Yeah.
A much more intense rush of those endorphins, whether it be, compared to impact. For example, 5, 6, 7 needles in, you might already be in space and floating up in the clouds. That's for both parties as well. I get my own personal little rush topping needles. that I enjoy. I go into a hyper focus on what's going on and all that. It's great.
I like that.
Right?
I like that.
Mm-hmm. What about you?
So I think for me, when I try to describe needles to someone, I differentiate between decorative and just doing needles for pain.
Oh, absolutely.
So like for me, they're always pretty to me. I've always found the aesthetic very pretty to see needles sliding into somebody's skin. I get a rush from that. But to me, it's one of the few play styles that I feel is very connected from the beginning.
Yes.
You're connected while you're doing the prep work. And I know we're going to dive into it, but you're connected throughout the whole thing. So for me, needle play is very intimate feeling. It's more erotic than some of the other play styles.
100% agree.
I couldn't agree more, actually. And that's actually kind of where my answer ends up going. It's needle play for me is trust because the level of trust required is so deep because you're asking someone to either be pierced or piercing. someone's skin many times over with a variety of gauges, colors, materials, and you're implicitly trusting them with the damage that can do to your skin. Control, because especially as the top, yeah, this is not for someone who has questions of control with their own, you know, you cannot be heavy-handed in needle play. I mean, once you're playing, sure, but when it comes to the actual piercing itself, you need absolute control.
Mm-hmm.
And last but definitely not least, sensation.
Yeah, sensation's huge.
It's more so, I think, it's underrated in a way people don't understand, because you have your traditional, you know, concept of, you know, piercing, you know, stabbies, pain, all that great stuff. But there's such a range of sensation in needle play that is often completely overlooked. Everything from the actual playing once the needles are in, the withdrawal, the endorphins. There's so many things that go through the body when you play with needles. And a lot of it is downplayed or otherwise completely unrealized.
That's true. I like that one.
So, needle play is one of those things where it's for personally, I see that there's so many different ways people get into it. So many different ways people enjoy it. Everything from pain therapy, which I've administered a few times over the course of the time I've played with them. You know, one of those things where somebody looks in and says, please hurt me. And it sounds funny on the surface, but, you know, psychologically, and I know Mike can back me up on this because this is a discussion we've had recently about, you know, the level of pain intensity that you get into when you get into deep needle play. It produces a certain chemical composition in your brain, and it does cause a certain amount of therapeutic reaction.
Very much so.
I'd agree. Absolutely.
So, I'd like to start us off with safety because it's such an important part of the equation. Like, even more so than
I was waiting for that.
Well, I mean, because even more so than knife play.
Good point.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Knife play needs a lot of safety. We know this. We covered it in that episode. We don't need to rehash it here. Needle play requires more. And I don't say that lightly considering the nature of both. But it's such a different scale because you're talking about multiple piercings of the skin in multiple places, often a concentrated area, as opposed to a single line or several lines where you're, you know, regardless of how, we're not going to get into that. That's a knife play episode. I would, you know, and I know I've covered my own go bag a little bit with knife play because I use a similar bag for both. I do ramp up to certain things, like obviously you need a needle container. That's kind of an obvious one. Like, please, God, have a needle container. Or don't play with needles.
You mean a Coke bottle doesn't work?
You had to. You just had to.
Listen,
I had to. Listen, I've seen it.
Sometimes you work with what you got, all right? I'm not going to totally slam that. At least it's glass.
Fair. That's true. Well, as long as it is glass.
Yeah, like I've seen worse. Even at, like a soda can. I mean, listen.
I'm kidding in that I know it's, look, I'm not saying it didn't happen over the course of my
20s. Not your bare hand, okay?
Right. Like, don't pick them up with your hand and just chuck them in the trash, please. For the love of God, don't do that. You shouldn't do that in the first place. Don't do it after they've already been in someone, okay?
Yeah.
You know, gloves, I prefer nitrile. I'm sure people have different preferences.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you exactly why, because I know there's not a huge difference in sensation, at least not for me. But
I actually... I'm more comfortable wearing nitrile. I feel like the latex-based ones are much too stretchy, in my opinion.
Okay.
You get a good, you know, well-fitting nitrile glove, and it hugs your hand, so it makes it a lot easier.
That's a good way to look at that.
And also, you eliminate that allergy possible, the possible allergen.
Oh, that's true.
That's the only reason why I like nitrile. I actually prefer the feel of latex, but I also have nails, so, like, the latex actually, they... form to my nails better than the nitrile gloves tend to, so I don't lose the dexterity.
That's fair.
But I agree, because the allergen thing, I don't carry latex gloves anymore in my kit.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. That's like having cleansers of varying kinds. Like I've mentioned with knife play, and I'll repeat it here because I would use the same for both, like Hibiclens and non-iodine, because for those with iodine allergies.
You know, as I've told you before, I primarily used to use the BZK towelettes because they work so well, and then go over it with alcohol. I actually recently tried the Hibiclens. I had picked up a bottle, diluted it down into a spray bottle, and spray down the whole area and then rinse it off real quick. Now I know everything is perfectly sterile. So I've actually started using that. It's much quicker.
Well, I was going to say, I actually want to get into that on a deeper dive, so to speak, since out of the three of us, I won't speak for Nox, as she may have had more recent, but I know you've certainly had way more recent experience than I have, Mikey. Why don't you give a brief synopsis of like your actual go bag, like what you actually use when you're doing, whether it's at home or.
Yeah, absolutely. So I keep a varying number of different gauge needles all the way. We primarily use 25. 23, 22, 20s, 18s, and 16s. 16s very rarely. but a lot of it is more artistic on my side of things. I mean, I always love doing endorphin buttons and stuff like that. But a lot of my work is purely artistic, where, it takes a while. But, keep all those needles, keep alcohol wipes, a sharps container, 1 to 2 packs of gloves, because you can never have enough.
Right.
And like I told you just a moment ago, I primarily used BZK towelettes for the longest time because they're easy, they're disposable and whatnot. So I still have BZK, as well as now a bottle of Hibiclens that I can spray on the area.
Nice.
Additionally, other than that, bandages, first aid kit. First aid kit is huge, hugely important.
Right.
Compression bandages, gauze, paper towels. And then for the more decorative side, I do keep jump rings. You can get them from most jewelry places or on Amazon. They work great for doing corsets. Corsets are fantastic. And then that goes to the last thing, ribbon. I keep lots of ribbon. surgical markers. Surgical markers as well. If you're doing something along the lines of stencil work or that more artistic side, then you're definitely going to want one of those. That's about it.
I'm curious about the BZK towels only because I've not used them personally. Like I know, because I know Hibiclens uses that. God, I can't remember it to reproduce it right now. Chlora something or other solution is their primary.
Chlorhexidine.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I knew one of you had it, but I didn't know what BZK was because as an iodine substitute, like that's one of those. I'm always curious what other options are out there. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I've not used the BZK, but I am familiar with them.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I like it's one. So I have, I will say this. I like the smell of strong antiseptics. Mm-hmm. Somehow it's like reassuring when I do this type of play.
Yeah.
Cause I do the same thing whenever I do like staples or decorative cuttings. Mm-hmm. But BZK specifically, somebody will open one of those across the room and I'm like, oh, that's where I want to stand. I don't know why I associate with somebody who's just more serious.
No, I can appreciate
that. I don't know why I have that association, but yeah.
Like, I enjoy it. I can appreciate that. And when I'm doing the work, I am absolutely in a zone where I would not, I would absolutely appreciate the smell of strong antiseptic in that moment. I normally don't at all. So, but that there's a lot of things that go with that. So in the moment always changes your mentality a bit. At least it does for me.
It's also what you become comfortable with. I've never had a single one of my pieces of work. I've never had one of them get infected. I've never had a partner who's gotten an infection from any of the needles, and they've always healed up within a couple of days. It's just that and the aftercare of it, they're great to have just because, say for example, I could send her home with a handful of BZK towelettes and say, if you take off your shirt, wipe it down with that real quick. Just take care of it and make sure it stays as clean as possible. So.
Extended aftercare.
Exactly.
Absolutely. See, I used to carry a little extra beyond that. And that's not because anything in there isn't valid, because I used to carry all of that. But I'd also carry a mini flashlight, which sounds ridiculous. But when you really think about it, once in a blue moon, you might freaking need it. And you'll be grateful you had it. Because you're not hunting for your phone to stick that light on it. right? Needle clippers and end caps, which, again, it's one of those, you don't need them as much as you used to, but it's a reassuring thing. I like having them just in case.
Yeah, that.
It depends on the purpose of what we're stabbing. Like, if we're doing, you know, like, I've done xylophones where, you know, the longer needles at the bottom and all of that, where you can play with it afterwards. Like, I like having end caps for that, because then you're not worried about the needles wiggling the wrong way.
Right.
You know. But then I almost always carried, you know, the standards that used to go with it. I usually kept at least a box of Twinkies, as sounds silly as it is.
Nope.
Because when I was, well, because when I was doing it at parties back in my 20s, which is when I did it most often, like, you never knew if your bottom was going to have their own prep fully or not. So I made sure I did, just as backup. So smelling salts, at least one warm little blankie, you know, like a paramedical blankie, things like that, just small stuff, a water bottle, not just for myself, which obviously you always want to stay hydrated as the top two, but, you know, because God forbid the other person's coming down and they have none of that because they didn't think it through or just didn't get a chance to, or right, forgot it at home, whatever it happens to be that day, you have it. And that's my personal responsibility as a top. That's my personal thing.
Right.
Oh, but it's people react to things differently.
Right.
And just because you've done needles with somebody multiple times doesn't mean they're going to react the same every single time you play.
Right.
Their headspace coming into it matters. So I think it's just responsible topping 101. Like,
to me, it is.
I always carry, like, I just have a first aid kit generically with me anyway. And I always know, like, if I'm at a venue, where their first aid stuff is at. So I'm kind of usually nearby it.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's, you got to be ready for somebody to fall out just as much as you falling out. So,
No, absolutely. Yeah. You have to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
one other.
Go ahead.
One other thing I had forgotten to bring up, styptic pencils. They're fantastic.
Yeah, I've noticed that you use those.
Yep. Like that. You need to stop a bleed. You know, every once in a while you hit a capillary, something like that, and you get a gusher. You know, put a little pressure on it, barely dab that pencil in some water, put it on the spot, clots it right up.
Perfect. That's fair. You know, I don't think I've ever thought about it. I usually use like liquid bandage and a couple of other coagulant types. So that actually makes more sense. I could so use those in a heartbeat. That makes a lot of sense now. I know what I'm adding to my bag next time.
And it adds a nice little stingy effect afterwards. So when you're applying it, it stings pretty good. So
that's what alcohol wipes are for too.
Oh yeah.
Now, since we're still on the subject of safety, let me be very clear on that, because not everyone will understand that the same way. Wipes are a catch-22 in that for the sake of the sting when you're pulling needles out, it's a nice extra little burn. It is something you, however, especially as the top or the bottom, you should be aware the healing is a little delayed as a result. It doesn't heal the same way. And it's not that it leaves scarring or anything like that, but be aware that the healing is much slower if you use alcohol along the way. It gets into the wounds and actually slows the healing process just a little bit. So if it's one of those, you're trying to get those needle marks off faster, consider not using it. And that's one of those situational things, but it's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
But by the same, go ahead.
No, I mean, I think too, the other thing with the alcohol wipes that I'm usually particular about is if you go over the same area too many times, you're actually going to irritate the skin around the hole.
Yes.
And so like that, I am particularly sensitive to that. So when I've bottomed for needles, I end up with that sensation of being rubbed raw if somebody goes over that area too many times. So you're getting kind of like a double whammy without intending to. So that's just me. I admit I'm weird. I'm the weird one.
No, I can appreciate that, though. I mean, that's why I'm also the things that, you know, supplies are one thing. But the other side, which is, again, assuming somebody's under a rock or hasn't thought it through, just so that we can say this isn't comprehensive to everything. But as most of us have some kind of, you know, triage experience at this point with things like this, because we've either had to or been in that environment, you know, potential risks people should be aware of if they want to stick other people with needles or be stuck with needles. You know, And these are one of those, you shouldn't have these if everybody's doing what they can, but the risk is always there, and that's why we talk about it the way we do. The big one at the top is nerve injury.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Likelihood is low if you're paying attention and you know your anatomy, et cetera, but the risk is never zero, and you need to be aware of it going in. That's important. Because
that's true.
Yeah, nerve damage is no joke. Anybody who's ever had fibro or knows somebody who's got fibro can tell you nerve damage is not fun. So for the risk of saying it alone, nerve injury is a big thing. You should be aware of it. Do some homework on it. If it's something that concerns you, think about that before playing with needles. It's worth bringing up. Most of us have already accepted that fact and moving on, but that's why it's not for everybody and why it's squarely in the edge play category for most of us, at least in my opinion. Alongside of that, you know, we're still talking about things we're sticking. So alongside that, you have things like, you know, fainting. There's people that will faint on, you know, injury of that type. Not most. It depends on how well they're familiar with their own triggers. But I've seen it happen to people who had no idea it was going to. Obviously, that's a problem. But it's worth being aware of as a result. You know, if your bottom starts fainting in the middle of getting stuck, maybe consider postponing. I've seen anxiety attacks. There are those that didn't know they had a needle phobia because they just hadn't been around needles enough before their first scene. Obviously less likely than it used to be, but it can happen.
Yeah.
The obvious things that, you know, don't need to be said, but we're going to say them anyway, bloodborne pathogens. Anything bloodborne. You know, you're talking about breaking the skin and causing blood in the area vicinity to exposed air. Be aware of infection. Be aware of you both being clean, you know, sound mind and body, not sick, all of that. When you're talking about breaking skin and dealing with biological anything, you both should be whole and healthy before you begin. Because it doesn't take much for one person to pick up something from the other or any number of things. It's not worth it.
Some people do go even further and request to have testing done prior to playing with new people. Yeah, in regards absolutely.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
I don't see anything wrong with that. Yeah.
No, especially not in this kind of play. It's not something you really want to mess around with.
Right.
Both people are at risk. Top, in my opinion, is especially at risk because they're putting themselves out there. You know, let's just say, for example, I'm piercing somebody and a needle goes through and pops into the tip of my finger. That's where you're going to take those handy little side cutters and you're going to nip off the tip of the needle. Well, now you're contaminated, but you're able to cut off the part that has contacted you. Your bottom is safe. So
that's actually what I was leading next with anyway.
Yep.
Sticking, because double sticking happens.
Yep.
And it can.
I've gotten close. Never done it. Never done it to myself yet.
It's the main reason I use needle clips. It's the exact reason I use needle clips, because I've done it once and it was minor. It wasn't a big deal, but being able to clip that in the middle and just pull the needle my way and not worry about the end cap. Yeah.
Yep.
Makes a difference for safety purposes, because then you just wash, clean, repostpone, consider what you need to do. But
absolutely,
that is absolutely the next part of that is needle sticking, because yes, the risk is you could poke yourself. If that wasn't somehow obvious by now with everything we're talking about, yes, you have the risk of poking yourself, especially if you're unpracticed. I don't care how many seminars you attend, how long you've been doing it. It's kind of like when I was talking about knife play and opened my damn thumb with a surgical scalpel after years and years of practice with blades. It is always possible to hurt yourself as the top.
Oh, yeah.
The risk is always there. And in this case, we're talking about a needle that has already been stuck through another person. So obviously a serious enough risk, you should think about it. Be aware of yourself. This is why control matters a lot.
100%. Steady hands.
Steady hands and maybe having some consciousness about where you're poking. Because I've watched so many needle tops where they naturally will stick their finger on the other end. And I'm like, what are you doing?
So one of my favorite things to do is I'll actually take the cap for the needle. And if I'm having a difficult area where I can't really get in there, but I need to apply pressure to that skin to finish popping through.
Yeah.
Take one of those needle caps, you put it right on the other side, line it up.
There you go.
It's really like butter.
There you go.
Right there. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's disposable.
Right.
Strange.
Well, and that's why you keep caps.
Exactly.
Like this is why you keep those extras. It's not for just everything, but you know what? In the moment you may need one. or in the moment you stick yourself to, and maybe it's not a big deal because it's like a 22 gauge, so it's like a pinprick, but you need to clean off the area, pull out the needle. You don't want to pull it first back through both of you, so you clip it first, you know.
Yeah.
It's common sense to those of us who've done it, but for a lot of people who are either just never gotten into it or first time, yeah, having nippers or cutters or some, even wire cutters if you just don't have access, it matters.
Nippers.
I'm sorry. I know. Nippers. Look, you know what they are too. I mean, I wouldn't recommend using those first, but if you're in a pinch,
get around.
Better than nothing. And with that, by the same token, especially with double sticking and things like that, anything of that, any injury related that makes you stop what you're doing, because one of you is poked the wrong way or you pocked the wrong thing, clean the area, like big time, clean the area, rinse, you know, whatever you may need to, hands, gloves, whatever's splattered, you know, and splatter happens too. That's worth bringing up at the same time now that I'm thinking about it. Doesn't happen often, but like Mike said about if you pop a capillary or something, there's a gush. You never know where it's going to go on that first hit. We can make all the jokes we want, and I know we're all thinking about something silly, or we've watched something silly, but it does happen. And I have watched blood squirt into people's eyes, mouths. It does happen, all bullshit aside. So yeah, at that point, rinsing is important. Big time. You know, yeah, don't just keep going. Please, for the love of God, don't keep going. Like, if you resume and you're like, okay, we can do this, we're good, that's up to the two of you, you're consenting adults, all of that. But at least stop long enough to check, please.
Yeah.
If there's blood in someone's eye, please stop long enough to check.
Oh, God, that's horrible.
Consider it a public service announcement, for the love of God.
That's horrible.
Right? Like, it sounds like it shouldn't be something you need to say, but...
No, it is.
And again,
it is.
As a top who's done it a few times, and as a sadist, I giggle at the thought of blood squirting in someone's eye. I'm not going to pretend I don't.
Gross.
Right? Absolutely.
That's gross.
Yes.
Oh.
But that doesn't mean it's good or that you should not pay attention to it, regardless. For the love of God.
CDB just had a stomach flip when he
said that. I'm so sorry. Moving on, for everybody's sake. Although that does allow us to go into the next step of that, which is, you know, we've mentioned like coverings of varying kinds, septic pencils and whatnot. What is y'all's go-to besides that for like capping off? Like Band-Aids? I like to use liquid skin, liquid bandage, but...
So I've had a negative experience with liquid skin.
Really?
Had a play session. Yep. And, use the spray-on one, which is the same exact chemical as the other one. And
right.
Went over the area. You're supposed to be able to leave it on and the wound will heal up as normal. Well, when she was wearing pants the next day, it actually started cracking the liquid skin. And that liquid skin was catching on the material of her pants and her underwear. And it was pulling on these wounds all day long.
Oh, no.
The worst part is the only way to get liquid skin off. And if you had liquid skin, it burns like a motherfucker when it goes onto you.
That's awful.
The only way to remove liquid skin, unless you get the sensitive skin one, which is washable, is to apply more liquid skin or use acetone. Oh, it was the nightmare, and I no longer even use that stuff after that miserable experience.
Really?
yeah.
I've never had a problem with them personally, but, you know, different strokes, different folks and all that.
Exactly.
Totally valid.
It was worth a shot at the time, but it did not go very well.
No, I get it. And if it didn't, then I wouldn't touch it either. I totally understand.
Mm-hmm.
It's the main reason I'm...
One of those ones you don't want to have happen.
No, definitely not. It's the main reason I went from that to... I mean, technically I use liquid bandage now, which is a different composition, and it's definitely not as inglorious as liquid skin was, thank God. It's the same principle, though. It's that liquid, you know, splash on, you know, brush on, whatever you want to call it. And that's just my personal, like, precision desire. That's all. That's my thing.
Right. Absolutely. Island dressings work great as well. They come in large bandages where you can almost cover up an entire piece, like the one that I had done recently this last week. You know, clean the area, apply an island dressing over it. It was 6x6 inches, covered the entire thing. they can take it off 24 hours later and start cleaning it. But that way, at least you know it's sanitary, sealed off, but it's still able to breathe, you know, and keep that healing process going. Those are fantastic to have. And then compression bandages.
Yes.
You can get 16, 18 of them on Amazon for $12. I keep those and some gauze. You throw gauze over it after you've sanitized it and wrap the compression bandage around the area. Leave it on for, you know, a couple of hours, no more bleeding, and they can resume normal everyday stuff. So
nice.
Yeah. And the I don't know if we cover them or not, but drop cloths are another one that's like not needed the same way. Like, it depends on what you're doing.
You got to prep the area.
Right. Well, I say that because I know people that'll use like full size drop cloths, like room size for whatever they're doing to like make the entire area functional.
Dexter.
Look, I was going to say, depends on what I'm doing it for, but 9 times out of 10, that's my natural habit too, if I have a choice. Yes. And it's because it depends on what I'm doing. But, you know, keep in mind, I've spent my time with so much knife play too. Sometimes it's both in the same scene. So you never know what you're going to move on to or what's going to happen. So you just want to be prepped for all the splatter. That's all.
Absolutely. And that way it also protects other people as well. Not necessarily just you and your partner.
Right.
Other people that may be watching, you're also protecting and taking their safety into account as well.
Well, and that'll change the kind of scene you're doing too. Cause I would not be doing anything like some of the harder core cutting scenes I have done, I have not done with an audience because it's simply not practical.
Got it.
But by the same token, you know, you mentioned like ribbons, string, marking pens, headlamps, often overlooked. Most people don't even think about them, but instead of needing a flashlight.
If you're doing it at home, you might have comfortable lighting. If you're doing it at a dungeon, you might not have comfortable lighting. Being able to see what you're doing helps.
Maybe.
Wouldn't want to do a piece of art in blue and purple and black light, you know. Might throw you off a little bit.
So I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, Mike, but not really on the spot, because I'm fully expecting some of these answers, or at least I hope I am. Gloves. Mm-hmm. Not what kind, but how often you change gloves personally. Like your personal go-tos.
If I touch anything other than a fresh needle still in its cap or their skin in the area that I've cleaned, I change my gloves. If I want to hit my vape, I'll hit my vape, change my glove. You know, anytime I touch anything outside of that controlled environment, I replace them. They're cheap enough. You might as well. Last thing you want to do is give somebody a staph infection in a wound, you know, from anything. All it takes is that 1 in 1,000 chance. And now somebody's in trouble, you know? So
nope. I appreciate that. That's exactly the way my rule of thumb is generally speaking, if you do anything other than in the play site itself, change gloves. Mm-hmm. It's just good rule of thumb.
Absolutely.
The thing that most people forget to do, and if you've not been through actual bloodborne pathogen training, glove etiquette is learned on the fly. Mm-hmm. You take the glove off before you touch the vape pen.
Yes.
And then you put the glove on when you're done.
Yeah.
And I say that because I watch... Right. Of course, running a space, like I see some shenanigans, but like that's one of the things that I see is people, they're like, oh, I need to go grab that thing. So then they just grab it and then they take the glove off thinking like, oh, I'm doing well. And it's like, no, now you've got two surfaces to wipe down, you know, because like they want to grab their phone and take pictures or whatever. And so they've got the glove on and they grab their phone and I'm like,
right.
And then I was like, I will just casually walk over and hand like a wet wipe or something. And I'm like, here, just you're going to need this when you're done. And they always look at you like, I don't understand. I'm like, you took your bloody hand and you touched your phone. And then they're like, oh, shit. It's like, take the glove off, grab the foreign object, set it down, and then get a new glove. Like, grosses me out so bad. Especially because I know none of you wipe your phone off from going to the bathroom. Let's just be honest. How many people clean their phones regularly, right? And so you're introducing more. But most people don't.
No, but most people don't have the problems I do at work and all that where I need to.
Well, but you got to solve for the average person, right? And like the average person is not cleaning their phone on a daily basis. They're taking it into the bathroom, whatever. So when you're doing a scene like this and you know the skin is already broken, and you go to grab your phone and you're still petting your play partner. It's like, ugh,
that, that just gave me all kinds of mental images I did not need. Thank you for that. Not your fault, obviously, because you're right. You're absolutely right. But
we all get lazy. I mean, it happens.
No, just no. And yeah, I wanted to comment on the response for, because they said something about the Saniderm aftercare bandages. I have seen them. I have not tried them because I have not had a partner to try them with since they've come around. Let's put it that way. So it is something I want to try because I'm curious to see how they hold up.
Mm-hmm.
But
as I actually had just said, though,
yeah,
a lot of people have allergens to that adhesive that is used in the Saniderm. I'm one of those people. I break out and I get real red in that area. Doesn't go anything beyond getting really bright red. But yes, it can cause reactions, and it does in quite a few people where it can cause that in their skin. So that's why I personally haven't used it yet. It's a great idea. It's fantastic if used properly. So
I am not a fan of it because the removal process is very difficult for some people.
Okay.
And if you're working on a large area, trying to do it yourself is difficult. For some people, that's almost like a two-person job. And so I am not a huge fan of it. Unless you've done something that's like an actual open wound, I think it's overkill, personally.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Good to know.
I mean, needle pokes are relatively small. Even if you have a group of like 20 of them, right? Like, you're still talking about a relatively minor affected area. But if you were doing something like knife play or, you know, things like that, where it's like more of an open wound on the skin, or like if the needle tears, I could see potentially wanting to increase the level of care. But I think using Saniderm specifically is going really overkill.
That's totally fair.
That's just me. Like I said, that's a personal thing.
That's one of those I think I'd automatically have to check the other person to see if they're allergic first either way, just because that's not... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not common.
No.
It's just not common.
Well, and it's something I can attest to on its own. Like, I don't know if it's the same material, but in a similar way, there was an adhesive gauze that I used at one point a couple years ago where I had injured one of my legs on the side right above the calf. And so I needed serious help dressing the wound. And neither of us thought about what kind of adhesive bandage we were using. So I would go days with this one on. And it just started getting itchy as fuck. It just bad. And I finally pulled off the initial bandage and it was just not good. The entire area was irritated as fuck. It was clearly not happy about the bandage. So it just made healing so much worse. Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely check the skin sensitivity of the bottom. And, well, actually both of you, because your fingers are still going to make contact, etc. too. Or in the event you need to bandage yourself. Like, be aware of your own, you know, allergic reactions to things like that. It's worth it.
Right.
Now that we're done with the safety,
I was going to say the
good shit.
The only other thing I was going to throw in there is for those of us that sometimes get sweaty hands for one reason or another in gloves, baby powder.
Oh, yeah.
Gross. Hand sanitizer, powder should be a go-to. Trust me. I've known people that will use a spritz of like 70% stronger alcohol. So if you're already using alcohol solution, you can do that. But that's based on perspective comfort zones, I think, at least to me.
I don't like powdered gloves. I actually hate that feeling. That grosses me out so bad.
I get it. See, I don't like the gloves themselves, but I keep the powder for my own. It doesn't happen often, but like in really warm environments, my hands will get sweaty inside the gloves. Less so with nitrile than with latex, so maybe not as much anymore. But as a result, I always needed baby powder around because I hated that. And I hated the moisture inside the glove. To me, that was a risk. So it was like, okay, we want to tamp this down.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, that's when I would argue you just go wash your hands and come back.
I've done that too. So yes, now that we're through the important bits, the safety maneuvers, as it were. All of which are really kind of important, but, you know, stabbies, better known as needles, tattoo needles or piercing needles, which are a different animal from hypodermics. They also come in much larger gauges. because they're not usually used for breaking skin this way over periods of time. But what's the high? I believe the highest gauge is 30. I won't swear by that. It's been a hot minute. I know it's up there. I don't know anybody that uses 30 gauge needles, but in the event that they did.
Yeah.
The ones they're familiar with are like 27s.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're talking about like molecules in size at that point. Funny, but not molecules. Wrong. Well, because you're talking about such a tiny breadth of space.
Molecules.
Like, I believe 30 is like 0.32 millimeters or something like that, if it's about right. Because 27 is 40. That's usually the base point I'm familiar with. That's usually used, like 27 is usually used for infants and whatnot. It's not usually used for fun piercing or game piercing or any of that. At least in my experience, I could be wrong.
Yeah, my go-tos tend to be 20s, 22s. Taking a liking to 23s recently because they're kind of in between 25s and they do a nice job. The most important thing is making sure you have something that's rigid that'll actually be able to penetrate without bending or curving at all.
Yes.
so that's huge.
Well, and that's the, like, I know people use 25s and above, but that's usually the thing where you have to add that little caveat of, but there's always the risk because the needles are so thin and therefore a little more flexible. You have to be careful when you're sticking them in the skin. Cause I've heard of people where it actually can cause worse because it'll bend just because of the angles you're in. Not that you can't do it, obviously. You just have to be far more mindful of your control.
Absolutely.
That's why I usually lean to 22s below. But 22 is... So, from the first responder's perspective, 22 is what's normally considered for basic adult needles in terms of regular use. You know, smaller veins, etc., older adults. 20 is more standard for, like, basic infusion. And then down the line, you get closer. You're like, 18 is for blood trauma, whatnot. 16 is for higher flow rate. 14 is like the top of surgical level needles, where you don't really do anything above that. But that's when you're getting into actual surgery, and you almost never see them in practical use otherwise. At that point, it's just whatever. Yeah. But I think 14 is the lowest hypodermics go, if I remember right. Just because there's no need for anything more, you know, any larger gauge than that for the purposes of surgical purpose, etc., in medicine.
Start moving into piercing beyond that.
Exactly. And for that reason. For exactly that reason. Well, even then, piercing needles go as far as 20 gauge down. But that's for, like, very basic nose and ear for, like, younger. You know, and then 16, 14 for what most people are familiar with regular piercings. Tongues, eyes, traguses. Industrials.
Eyes. Models.
Well, yeah, eye piercings, eyebrow piercings, helixes.
There you go.
I didn't mean right through the eye itself. No, don't stick someone in their pupil, please. That is not a decorative piercing. I don't care who you are. Let's not do that. But by the same token, once you get down to, I think 12 is 2 millimeters even, and anything below that, it's a gauge of 2 down, and it just gets bigger. I think the highest I've ever seen someone actually use in needle play is a 6 gauge, but you need to understand, for those that are unfamiliar, 6 gauge is 4 millimeters across. It's a big beastie. That will leave a hole in you. Do not play at anything that gauge unless you're really into that and really familiar with what kind of damage it's going to do to your skin. Cause that's usually not a prick. That's a hole. Like, no bullshit, that's a hole.
When you get to that point, you're talking about flesh hooks and things like that.
Right.
You're not really talking about needles, well, per se.
Usually, yeah. I've seen people use them like needles in certain capacities, but it's rare as fuck. It absolutely is. I've never heard of anyone using anything below that, but for the sake of reference, just to be comprehensive, like, there's 0 gauge and then 00 gauge. 00 gauge is a full 10 millimeters across.
Mm-hmm.
Don't. Like, I don't know how you could with the right person, I suppose, but just don't.
Punch.
Unless you're looking for permanent marks for life. Because that will simply open an entirely sizable hole in your body that will stay.
Jesus.
Let's just not bullshit that one. That's exactly what that is. Not saying you can't. Just think about it. And yeah, as was said in the chat, at that point, you might as well just go play with hooks anyway.
Yeah. I liken those to the actual punches, though. Like, you're trying to actually do a punch within the surface.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's just a whole different... to me, that's not needle play.
I agree with you. I mean, I've known people that have called it that, but I agree with you. Once you get to that point, it's more like into scarification than it is needle play, because you're dealing with such a large gauge. Yeah. Well, that's like I was saying before we started about, like, I've seen people use like sixes and eights, and they compare it to being stabbed with an ice pick. I'm like, and you did this willingly. I'm not saying you can't, but you did volunteer for this.
Right.
So either you really like ice picks, or the sensation apparently is appealing. Not saying there's anything wrong with that. Obviously, I'm into stabby things, but for the sake of comprehension. No, I've seen, actually, I'll just ask around, like, I'll ask you both, what is your go-to sizes in terms of lengths when you use
inch
them?
Inch and a half.
Okay.
Inch and a half. Yeah.
Only inch and a half?
Yeah, I feel like that's pretty standard.
I would, so.
I don't see a need to go longer than that. Well, I guess it depends on what you're doing. Like, the decorative stuff, I think that's when you get into the longer, but for the average, like what Mike is talking about, I'm in the same boat. An inch and a half is as far as I needed to go.
I usually keep inch and a half both, and that's for just that reason. It depends on what I'm doing, how many of them I'm trying to use. And that's a very relative thing, obviously, but it wasn't uncommon to use both in the same scene at one point, because I could get more at the smaller gauges, more in line using the smaller lengths. Mm-hmm. And that was just a personal thing at that point for where I was putting them on the body, etc. Not something I would do every time, all the time. But
yeah, artistic-wise, it makes a huge difference. For example, if you're doing a stencil, I had recently done a Cupid's arrow for Valentine's Day. And the arrow comprised of the part of the flesh that was raised from the needle underneath. There were points in that where it took up an entire inch. The needle actually traveled for a full inch, inch and a quarter under the skin. So some of the, it was nice. Sometimes you need that extra length just to help out with things specifically like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes sense.
It does.
Also, if you're doing multiple piercings with the same needle, if you're, you know, weaving, for example, going in and out, you might need that extra length. So.
Okay, so I know I have my preferences. Another round of the revenue, just because I'm curious how people differ in this regard. What is your usual place spaces? In other words, what areas of the body do you usually stick the most?
Stick the most?
Well, if you have a preference for, like, so I'll just jump myself in first. I am partial to thighs. I have done breasts, but I'm real careful with that.
Yes.
But I'm not as keen on backs and chests unless it's decorative, and that's because that's a different, you're working with a different part of the body in terms of fleshiness versus bone and where all the blood vessels sit. So what about you, Mike?
There's a bunch of different spots. For example, the back is great. As you've seen, I love doing corsets.
Yes.
Thighs, side of the ass, like right there on the side of the butt cheek. You can even do calves. You can do a corset running up the back of the calves, up the back of the thigh. It just really depends. Breasts are one that I tend to stay away from, like truly on the actual breast itself, because they do tend to be very venous.
Yes.
And the last thing you want to do is, you know, cause some severe injury. And, you know, there's other important stuff in there as well. You do not want to cause damage to.
Right.
So, you know, I go to a certain level on the chest, you know, for example, with endorphin buttons, whatever it may be, but for the most part, I try to stay away from anything like that more further down on the breast. So.
No, I can appreciate that. For the record, I did, because I had a partner at one point where that was a big deal for them, because the bruises and whatnot and the small gauge marks and scars would last sometimes for weeks, and she enjoyed that. So that's one of those you have to be aware going in. And that's one of those other negotiate these things, because if they are interested in anything like that or they ask about it, it's something you always want to point out is you need to be aware the healing time on that will be much longer. So if that bothers you or you have to worry about who else will see it. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Nox?
I'm not as, preface this. I'm not as versed in needles as the two of you are. I'm relatively new to it. So the places that I've actively done has been the back, top of the butt crack. I have done breasts, thighs, and forearm.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't, by no means do I have the experience the two of you guys have with that.
No, it's totally fine. I assume nothing.
Don't get me wrong. The only reason why I haven't done the face or anything like that is just because I have not been confident enough in my skill level to do it. Like, I know I can do it.
Right.
But like, I've just never, I'm always so focused on pieces of the body that I can move easily to myself.
No, so, I can like, appreciate I just don't that. Go there. No, absolutely.
Nipple piercings are a great one that you can do. You don't even necessarily have to use like a standard 14 gauge would be what would be used to actually pierce a nipple. You could always go with a 22 gauge. Incredibly intense sensation for whoever's bottoming. You can even, you know, introduce that kind of play and just be very cautious and careful, you know. At that point, it's great to have actual little needle forceps, or not needle forceps, piercing forceps.
Yep.
They work great, especially when it comes to the nipple, because it's hard to hold both sides while passing a needle through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Extra caution is always welcome.
Yes. Yes.
I'll even go one step further, and I know we didn't cover this because it wasn't really safety. This is more in the play fun category. I've known people to add weights to piercings, nipple piercings, etc., especially because it's an obvious area to do that. Obviously, be cautious. For anyone listening who decides this is a great idea, please do your homework. Please have a grasp of what weights will affect the body different ways, especially if you're adding them to things like nipples, for the love of God, especially if you just stuck a fresh needle in it. Feel like that needs to be said.
No.
Because I've seen people love it, but it goes back to anything else. The more you add, the risk gets greater. If that's comfortably in your risk profile, have at it. You're consenting adult. Do your thing. Always. We welcome all the fun shit you're into. But please be careful.
I do want to say this. Like, because we're kind of like ping-ponging all over the place with that kind of stuff. But like, the reality is, when you plan out your scene, I feel like needle scenes are one of the ones that you really actually have to plan out and have in your head. What do I want to do? Like, what is the goal? Right. And so adding weights is not going to be a pop fly in the middle of the session. Like, it's not the same. Like, because I feel like for perspective, impact, right? You negotiate the toys and all that kind of stuff, but like the order you do them, things like that can be a little more fluid. Whereas I feel like when we're talking about needle play scenes, they do kind of follow a format.
They do.
A lot of people, right? Because there are just the prep work has to go in a certain way. Then the actual piercing goes a certain way. And then what you do after you're pierced, you know, that's when things can get a little more creative, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the weights and things like that, like if somebody's already having like a really strong reaction to being pierced, planned all that cool shit, but you're not going to follow through with it because you can see your bottom is already having a really strong reaction and they're already doing fine. You don't need to ramp it up.
Oh, no, I agree with you.
I just want to say that, like, I feel like there is kind of, I don't want to say it's a formula because I don't want people to be rigid about it, but like,
no, you're not wrong.
There is kind of like a set procedure.
I look at it from this, and it's the only reason I was injecting in the first place, is I look at it from both perspectives, because there's those like Mike and I, where I won't speak from Mike's experiences with where he's at. I had two sets of experiences, because I had the early year experiences where I was going to like Fetish Factory and whatnot, where there's a very different, you laugh, but you know the environment I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. You have a lot more public crossover. And so you have people with a lot less experience who may end up injecting into the environment to like, hey, that looks cool. Can I try it? And unfortunately, even if they don't do it there, they go home and do it. Well, you can't help that in that environment. But in this case, there's people listening to the sound of my voice. And I need to make sure that if they've decided they're picking it up for the first time and they don't do the research, I'm covering what I can reasonably. So like for that person, they should be aware, don't play with weights.
Yeah.
I might consider that environment because I know what I'm doing. If they don't and their bottom doesn't know any better, the risk is there in a different way. And so I'm trying to look at both ends of that angle. That's all. But by the same token, you're not wrong in that. There's only so far of that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after a while it becomes, well, can you cover everything? No, you just can't. That's why you need to still, you know, people still be going to classes, seminars, have someone teach them. Don't just pick up needles in a vacuum and try them out, even on yourself. Just don't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's not like a flogger where if you hit yourself accidentally and you don't hit too hard, you'll be okay. You know, if you stick yourself with a needle the wrong way, you could do real damage the first time, even on yourself. Please go do some homework, sincerely. And I'll say that'll be the last I say on that for now. I will say, however, the other side of that, do you have a specific pinch technique, Mikey? I know I don't have a particular, but...
So it's actually kind of funky. I pinch in hard to get to places, but for the most part, I don't necessarily need to pinch.
Okay.
You kind of learn to maneuver the needle and you can actually see it trailing right there under the skin. A lot of the times I won't, unless I absolutely have to get into a very tight space, where I might only be making a quarter of an inch long penetration. At that point, you know, pinch it a little bit and pop it straight through. But for the most part, trying to stay, you know, on stencil or on the pattern that you're setting up, you're kind of watching that needle travel under the skin as you go. So that way you're getting your ins and your outs where you want them to be. So, you know, basic fingertip pinch. If you're uncomfortable with that, you can always, like you said, use the piercing forceps, pick some of those up. They have disposable and permanent ones, you know, but for the most part, just fingertip pinching slightly off to the side of where I want it to come out.
That's fair. And I've heard of, I think some people call that a swoop technique technically, because you're going, you know, not to get deep into the medical side of it, but you have epidermis, dermis, and then the fat, and it's the fat layer you want to pierce through and come back up, technically speaking. And that's why I asked about the pinch method is for those that don't know the difference, obviously. You want to pinch only the flesh. You're trying not to let the muscle underneath get up into your layers, so you're not piercing through muscle. And that's the whole reason that you do it a certain way and all that. But that's like Mike's saying about the, what is effectively the swoop or the eye method is you're basically doing it by eye and you're just scooping through the fat and back out, but you really kind of have to know where you're, you know,
yes,
you definitely have to have an eye for what you're looking for before you start doing that. I will say that.
Pinch method is great. It's a quick, easy way to learn.
Exactly.
As opposed to trying to swoop it down in, otherwise, you end up sitting there jabbing around with a needle under the skin, trying to get to where you want to go. You know, it's not.
Yeah, don't do that.
No.
Please don't.
Right?
Like, I mean, like, look, we can talk all day
that was
about
a great visual, though.
Right? Like, that's the trade-off. Unless you really like that and you're into that sort of thing, in which case, again, consenting adults, you talked it out, you do what you want. But.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
You know.
It is hot.
It is. It absolutely is. Well, I mean, that's no different than there's nothing hotter than watching, you know, when your bottom has a ladder of needles, and this is where we get to really talk about the really fun play side of things. You know,
yes.
Knuckle wraps, taps, you know, you got a range of 8 to 12 needles on somebody and they're, you know, already feeling all of that, all the pressures and stimulations and psychologicals. Mm-hmm. And then you play with it.
Oh, yes.
And that's when the fun begins, Your Honor.
One of my personal favorite implements is something that I actually keep in my needle bag that I also forgot to bring up is a ruler, a metal ruler.
I've seen you do that. Yep.
You get all the needles in, you sit there and you rap on it and smack it a couple of times. And it's fantastic. You can also use the corners and drag them up the actual shaft of the needle. It's great. The things that you can do with such a simple tool.
Awesome.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's something about
endorphin buttons too.
Yes. Endorphin buttons, pain buttons.
Smack him with a ruler a couple of times.
Oh yeah. Another person. Well, and with the art kind of thing, you get to do the other side of that. And I know Mikey knows what I'm talking about. When you get like a really good decorative art unit and it's just a circle of needles, if they're done right, you take the whole, you ring it with your fingers and you raise the area by bringing up the flesh against the needles as opposed to tapping or whatnot. And it's a whole different experience because it causes a different kind of flushing.
And then vice versa. If you get one of those ring stencils, which I think you had actually seen me do, you can take one of those caps for your needle and you can push it down in the center of it. Now it's causing every one of those needles to point inward and start digging into their skin. Additionally, it's great.
It's awesome.
Oh, yes. Well, and there's nothing quite as exquisite as when you're doing your work and you have, X amount of needles in somebody and they're getting to that, especially if they're really into the pain. So they're like already starting to fly a little bit. They're getting that shake or shiver. They're off a little bit, not to where they can't communicate. Obviously that's standard 101. If they're not communicating, you need to check yourself. shouldn't need to be said at this point, but in the event you skipped on that kind of safety in this podcast series, if your bottom is not responding and nonverbal, consider stopping. Well, moving on, go back to consent and safety and come back to us after you've been there. Thank you. but they're in that space where they're starting to fly away. Their sensations are shifting. Their psychological reactions are shifting. And then you wrap your knuckle along that line for the first time. And that deer in the headlight look moment happens because it was an extra sensation they were not expecting yet because they're no longer focused. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty fucking hot. I ain't gonna lie. tapping, strumming. I personally enjoy sternum rubs, but that's specifically if I'm using needles that are in the chest area, not so much if they're not. And fair warning to anyone.
Sternum rubs are just underrated.
Oh, yes, they are. Fair warning to those who've never tried it or have heard about it and curious. It does hurt. It is not just a mental stimulation. It can cause pain. Depending on the force used.
Yep. The sternum? Never.
Yeah, right. I've never caused pain there. Cough, cough.
I mean,
that's actually one of my personal favorite spots for something called the typewriter game, but we can talk about that later.
Hold up. Or is that not needle
related? No, we can talk about that now.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it needle related?
Yeah, you can't say that and then not.
I'm clarifying.
You can do it with needles. It's also just something fun to do with your partner.
Please elaborate.
Giggles. You can always do needles in it, but what you do is you take the, your first finger knuckles and you start, smacking on the, right on the sternum with those. And you go harder and harder. And the thing is you keep doing that as hard as you want until they say the word ding, at which point you slap them. It's fantastic. As long as they're, okay with you slapping them, it's something great just to do for fun.
I have a whole new idea.
Yep.
Not gonna lie, I have ideas now.
That's hilarious.
Isn't that though?
Yeah. Yeah. That's super funny.
Thanks for that. I have a whole new slew of ideas I can add to my stable now. This is why we talk.
100%. Say to Sunday.
Yes. In addition to everything else, it is in fact Say to Sunday. Let the creativeness flow.
Sharing is caring.
That too. Depends on the kind of caring you want to do. But especially if it involves spreading pain to everyone. Well,
that's a given.
I mean, of course. Suffering is relative.
So, Mike, I have a question for you.
Yeah,
because I have worn corset piercings. How do you go about doing them? What's your technique when you're planning out a corset piercing?
Figuring out how many we're going to do, first of all, as well as how big of an area it's going to cover, as well as how decorative you want to make it. If you want to do three or four different types of ribbon, you're going to reduce your spacing down in between them. I like to do it with the hubs facing outwards. The reason for that is I can take one of those jump rings, pop it over the hub. I can't remember the size jump rings that I use, but they're the perfect size where they fit over the hub. So that way you're not trying to put the jump ring on the needle and then thread it and then pierce them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yeah, it depends on the purpose of it. But for the most part, what I do, start up, lay them completely flat on their chest, find their spine from the top all the way up by their neck, all the way down to their lower back. Create a line from there and there, an imaginary line, and basically start off of those. I'll measure a certain distance outwards. A lot of the times it's 3 inches each way.
Okay.
And I make, you know, another inch, a half, or another mark a half an inch away from that. So each of my needles is going to travel a half an inch under the skin. At that point, once you've completed all of your actual piercings, you can go ahead, throw the jump rings on, begin lacing it up. But it all depends on the intricacy. Ideally, I go about 1 inch gaps for standard ones like you guys have actually seen. Those were all 1 inch gaps apart. And then just do that for however long the corset's going to be, you know?
See, I've never had the luxury of getting into corset piercing, much as I've loved to, because I think it's fucking gorgeous, to be brutally honest. Mm-hmm. But it's always been one of those, I've never had a bottom long enough who's into that I would have been comfortable approaching about that level of work.
Gotcha.
Because, yeah, there's some out-of-sight ones. I've seen some amazing work over the years from in the ribbon category. Just not just corsets, but anything in the ribbon category. Just all kinds of beauty.
Yeah. They're super fun to wear, I will say that. Like, I tend to find them. And again, I've bought them. This is one of the few types of bottoming that I've actually done quite a lot of that I'm comfy with.
Okay.
And I would, a lot of events that I would go to, especially where it was the stand and model crowd, you would see these get done a lot, kind of more in a fashion kind of way, like fetish fashion, I guess. And so I've done that at a couple of events. So it was like at the beginning of the event, it's not a scene. So it's not about headspace or things like that. It's like, okay, we're going to put the corset on you. And so like it was usually 8 rows down my back. And then, you know, they do the ribbon. And those of you not familiar, you're literally just meant to go walk around the event with that in your back.
Yeah.
And kind of the fun part about it is fun. Like you do get that really cool endorphin rush and it just kind of carries you through for a couple hours, but experience the crash of that to be harder than any scene that I've done.
Oh, I can imagine. Cause that's long term.
It is. Cause like the longest I've worn one was about 2 hours. And the reason why I ended up taking it out when I did was I could feel one of them was starting to tear.
Just from
my movements walking around, which I mean, it does happen. It doesn't mean like anything was done incorrectly. It's just the nature of you moving around and, you know, people trying to hug you and you trying to step back because you're like, back is open. They're like, oh,
please don't.
please don't do that.
Trying to complete basic tasks becomes a whole new task of its own.
It does.
It does. It really does because it changes how you bend over and how you do things because it's
your position.
Yeah, you do. You start forgetting that they're there until you remember that they're there. But I mean, and that's why I was asking, like how you approach it, because I've experienced a scene based corset, but I've also experienced what I'll refer to as like a fashion corset, and it's
a good way to describe
it. So radically different.
A lot of mine are.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
A lot of mine are primarily scene based. You know, I have my partner Raya. And, you know, I love her to pieces. She's great. She is enthusiastic.
Huge shout out to Raya. Exactly.
Oh, yes.
Huge shout. Yeah.
But she's done fantastic. And, you know, it's always been scene-based. You know, I'm not a huge fan of just doing it for random people. I mean, I wouldn't mind poking other people after they've answered, you know, kind of my list of questions that I would go through with them. But at the same time, my primary focus is scene-based when it comes to that. So.
Got it.
I completely appreciate that. That's definitely been my leaning, and it's gotten more so as I've gotten older.
Yes.
You know, my early 20s, I was a little less calm about, like, I'd work with needle bottoms that I wasn't directly involved with, stuff like that. Not often, but it happened. But as the years went on and the older I've gotten, the more personal it's become for me. So I get it.
Yeah.
And by the, you know, fashion art, I need to specify, because I remember it wasn't at Fetish Factory. It was another party further south to Miami. And I won't remember the name of it to save my life these days. It was long ago. But I remember there was a lady who was wearing a calf, double calves in heels.
Yep.
And they were like 8 or 10 ribbons deep. It wasn't like just a couple of them. So it was a work.
Yeah.
And I was it was amazing and it was hot. But at the same time, all I could think was, Jesus, she's going to wear those for 2 hours straight. That's, and obviously she made it because she made it through the event, but I cannot imagine. Yeah. That's a lot.
Also depends on how tightly they're tied.
Right.
You know,
well, and I don't,
if you want
that's another one.
I don't remember them being super tightly tied, but I mean, they were clean. Like it was a fashion use. It was definitely clean.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Cause you can always increase that intensity, you know, in the lower back, for example. The lower back is fun to really start tightening it down in where you actually technically want to create that hourglass figure with a corset. You begin tightening it much more as you get further down the line, and it just, it looks phenomenal, but it also increases and amplifies that difficulty of doing anything where it immobilizes them much more.
Yes,
absolutely.
I do want to touch on in the chat, because it's definitely worth bringing up. There's a comment about needle suspension. I have heard of this. I have not personally witnessed this, and I want to. Like, this is the kind of, I'm not as familiar with rope. I need to get back into rope. I'm out of practice. I was never super expert at it. I would love to be. The idea of needle suspension is like the best of my both worlds, because I could definitely get into this.
I'm giggling right now because I'm like, somebody's watched Strangeland too many times.
Possibly, but like they're saying they've seen them at
anybody
least a few
remembers
times.
That movie?
It's been a hot minute.
I have seen something similar to that. Because one of the riggers that I was close friends with has done like dental floss suspensions, things like that. And this topic did come up because the bottom was interested in it. And the scene that they started, they were able to pretty much get her arm started, and she tapped out because it's intense. You're doing, because in order to like suspend the body, you have to do so many more points. Right.
Yep.
And so you're talking about some pretty in depth, you know, and with her, she had two needle tops working on her at the same time. And they were in a really good rhythm. I will say that it was fun to watch because they had a good rhythm going. They had two helpers that were, you know, making sure to hand them, you know, the needles that were prepped. And, but it was just the amount of time it took to even do that much. It was exhaustive.
Well, back and legs make sense for that. Yeah. That's the thing, is I can see the logistics in my head. Like I can imagine how much fine tuning it would require and the amount of needles required for it to work safely even. So I would never, I personally would never try it without years of practice where I am super comfortable with that level of needle play. And I'm not, and I won't even sugarcoat that. That is not within my sphere of expertise. But I would watch it in a heartbeat. It sounds amazingly hot.
Yeah, but the next comment makes a lot of sense. The particular person was a full-blown masochist with a hook suspension aficionado. So like that tells you, it's their main kink. So yeah, absolutely. God.
Oh, 100%. Well, look, we all know that main kinks are what make them even better. So
it is, right? And that does increase your endurance.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to react differently to it. Yeah, I agree.
Well, and it's on both sides of it, because on the sake of the bottoms, it's going to increase their sensitivity to it, their reactions to it, et cetera.
Yeah.
For the top, it's how far into the creative pool you dive. Because, I mean, not that you don't get, like, look, you can get into some serious creativity even on the surface with certain kinks. Some of them you have end up deep diving to get to the real core of creativity because you don't know how to play with it the same way until you get comfortable with it that way. And for things like needles, where the level of safety is so paramount, the chemistry between you has to be on point to play in that arena to begin with, in my opinion. That's solely my opinion. I mean, it could be done otherwise, but you really have to have trust. Because it's when you have that kind of trust, you can play. Like, really play, not just play like we usually call it. But...
yeah.
Makes sense.
Right. Okay, so, you know, we've covered the fun, we've covered the safety. There's the other side of that, which it's not quite safety, it's not quite off safety, but psychological stuff. and I don't want to deep dive too hard in it because, I mean, you know, getting into subspace and stuff like that is its own thing. We don't need to cover that today. That's been covered many times over. But, you know, needles is definitely a kind of sensation play that it does definitely affect the brain a little differently than like impact does because the intensities.
Absolutely.
I've never been a needle bottom for long term, so I can only speak to what little experience I have as a top in terms of what's been told to me. Like psychologically, there's definitely the way it was described to me is as opposed to a serious, intense impact scene where it's from a different source because it's a different kind of pain. Because the intensity is just a different level is the way I was described. And not level, like there's levels. That's kind of one of the things we try to avoid. There's a difference in the kind of intensity and how sharp that intensity ramps up is the way it was explained. And so the way you react to it mentally is different because your body's interpreting it at a different pace, which makes total sense to me. But it's also why you really like want to know your partner.
100%. Know where they're at all times after everything you do. No, and that's kind of where we kind of get our space out of that. You know, you get into that focus mode where that is your task at hand in your own mind, where you can actually get in a very deep focus state. And I love that. That's my high from the whole situation. Is being able to do that and put that much attention into one thing, to the point where you're, you know, watching every reaction, you're watching how they're breathing. That's a huge thing, you know, that helps out a lot with needles is proper breathing technique. If you can sync your breathing with theirs, where when you breathe in, they breathe in. When you breathe out, they breathe out. And that's normally when you want to make your poke on an out breath. But if you can synchronize it like that, it's much more efficient. It works out better for everybody as well.
Oh, I 100% agree. And that there's so many jokes about breathe in, breathe out that if people haven't made, they're going to think about the moment they hear this. But it's not wrong. It's really not. But your description of that space is I am 100% right there with you. Like it's now, granted, this is through my traditional lens of what, you know, DS dynamics feel like in the first place. When you're really in tune with your partner and you get into that moment and that first needle's in your hand, you're just the mental space takes over and you're hyper focused. Like you basically tune out anything in the world that is not immediately involved. Not that you're not aware of anything, because of course you always want to be semi-aware. But
absolutely,
it's like you go into this hyper-focus where you can almost detect the rhythm of their heartbeat, even if you're not anywhere near it. Like you just get so in tune with the other person because you're paying attention to everything. The way their eye twitches, the way they're breathing, if they're nervous, you know, you're watching their eye reactions, their hand reactions, their skin, you know, all of that, the temperature of their body. And it really is like you tune out everything else the same way. You tune that up to 11 and you're just in that space and it's extremely calming. It's almost cathartic to be in that moment because everything just stops. I mean, subspace is compared similarly, but I mean, there's a reason we chase top space the same way. And that's why I'm partial to edgier forms of play because you get a lot more of that because the intensity is based on how much control you need, how much trust you need. And you just completely tune into it.
I'd agree with that. Definitely. And I'm curious if anybody that's listening has any questions at this point, because I feel like
absolutely
everybody's being like oddly quiet in the chat.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it's also it's definitely in the less common kink arena. Like you know, you're more likely to see someone play with knife play because it's more into the sensation border in that you don't need it to break skin to produce the same reactions. Whereas like impact and those are far more common. Not that kind of noisy, Sammy. nice try though.
Right.
Thanks though. I appreciate the gesture. But no, it's definitely, it's one of those less common, almost to the point of exclusivity. Like we look at BDSM, we talk about it from the point of, we know it's such a microcosm of kink. I would venture to say needle play is almost at that same level of tiny percentage base. I think you find more crossover in BDSM as a result because the percentages are so small for both. But that's my opinion. I don't like have facts and figures staring in front of me.
Yeah. Right.
I like that. You're welcome.
Right. The only other thing I want to, I got to ask you this, Mike, only because you're the new person, so to speak, in terms of my views and perspectives. As far as emotional safety, this is just a curiosity thing, and you're not, this isn't a test or anything. Let me, let's be clear. As far as coming down goes, like what is your, what kind of mentality and awareness do you have as far as when you're letting the other person down when you're done emotionally, mentally, like checking in with them?
Talking to them, communicating. A lot of the times it requires a good amount of aftercare, you know, a nice warm shower afterwards. Just keep checking in on them. You know, if you notice something's off, and that comes down to where you need to know the person. If you can sense they're a little quieter than usual, you know, just ask them how they're doing, how things are going, how it's healing up. Some people shut it out completely where it's very difficult to detect that. Others, you know, you can more or less pick it up. So it's just a matter of monitoring them, making sure that you don't notice anything too off. And at that point, you know, some reassurance, some love, whatever it may be. You know, it is much more intense on the emotions than a standard scene would be.
I agree with that. Reassurance is definitely big on my aftercare kit, so to speak.
Yep.
Because, yeah.
Really
yeah.
Fantastic, you know. And just, you know, keeping positive vibes going their way.
Oh, yes.
They just went through pincushion hell.
No, I agree with that. Because that's, yeah, the come down can be, I've seen all kinds of rages from emotions. I've watched people get angry. Like, not at anyone specific, they just get mad. Like, it's just their come down reaction. You have to manage for that, too, for those people. That, granted, that goes back into the, you know, vetting negotiation part, but I usually will ask a bottom of any scene, really, but especially with, like, edgier scenes, just that. Like, do you know what your emotional state is during aftercare or during come down? Like, if you're familiar with what usually happens for you. Which, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But it never hurts to ask because, you know, different reactions you have to manage different ways. You don't have the same kit for everything.
Yep.
Not realistically, anyway. And
that's honest.
You know, and we have examples in the chat, like one person's needle play puts me to sleep,
yeah.
Which absolutely lethargic but happy is also very common. I've known people that will feel sleepy like that for days afterwards, just like that was mentioned. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not uncommon. And then the drop will happen after that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something to think about as a top, is that your bottom may not drop within the first 24 to 48 hours because the intensity involved, and depending on how deep your intensity is, like if you're doing a handful of needles, it's possible that it may happen the same day. If it's, you know, a lengthy scene or you're breaking like 50 to 100 needles into a scene, like really hyper intense and really deep, like it can be like 4 or 5 days later. And that's something to be aware of and think about. Like, don't think you're in the clear in that first several days. Do not assume anything at least a week out just to be safe. Because the drop can happen that late if it's intense enough. And I've seen it. And that doesn't mean anything bad in and of itself. It's just you should be prepared for that, because that drop is going to be just as fierce as the flying was.
Like, I am one of those people that I don't drop immediately. Like, I have the happy endorphin rush, and I get like the fun floaty like after this. And then even like an hour later, I do get tired, you know, just like I would after like a really good workout or any other kind of scene. But yeah, the next day, the day after, or even like 2 days, it's almost like when you feel like you're catching a cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll have that sensation for probably, I would say, up to 3 days. And then I kind of seem to like bounce back, but it's, I don't feel like the drop is any harder than other play. I think it's just different. Because it's more psychological. It's just different.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely.
I find needle play to be way more psychological than a lot of the other aspects.
Yes.
Yes.
It absolutely is. That's one of those, like, go ahead, Mike. Yeah.
It's hard to explain because
it's hard to quantify
that. It's different. It's because, like, I feel like when your body aches because you have a bruise that you can point to, like, somehow that's more comforting. Whereas with needles, it is such a mind fuck to see something poking through your skin, recognizing that it hurts. but not necessarily having carnage.
Yeah.
Or not necessarily having that exertion of having to keep yourself standing and, you know, the endurance aspect. It's, I think people really discount kind of in medical play as a whole, but I think people really discount the amount of endurance that you go through psychologically. Yes. And like,
oh, yeah,
a lot of people that bottom from needles that I've watched, they don't like necessarily watching what's happening. They want to experience it. And so they do kind of disassociate, and they'll kind of like periodically look and then kind of look away again because they're just wanting to feel it.
Yeah.
That sensation of the needle going in their skin, the needle coming back out, and that slow draw process, especially removing it. Mm-hmm. But like, it is way different mentally for me than doing even rope space.
Oh, yes.
Like it's just for me, it's just radically different.
Well,
I think that's why the drop for it is so different.
I'll agree with that. Well, I mean, I think that's part of the reason we call it rope space instead of just referring back to bottom space or top space in the first place, mm-hmm. is because it, even rope space is its own psychological thing, and it's very different from other kinks in some capacities. The same thing is very much true with needle plate come down and drop and everything. It's a very different process. The intensity is a big part of it because, again, it's as opposed to like knife play. If you're in a big knife play scene, there's deep cutting involved or like serious knife, you know, carving art, that kind of thing. It's different kind of intensity because you're working with larger things, like in terms of, you know, bodily trauma, et cetera, and the way it processes on the body. You're working with bigger functions, so to speak. So the reactions themselves may be strong, but there's a lot less of it overall because it's a handful of times and then recovery. Whereas in needle play, you're talking about, depending on how big involved you are, like if you're talking 20, 30 needles, and that's even on the low end for some people, like that's a lot of body trauma to happen rapidly.
Yeah. Yes.
And even though it's pinpricks, it's body trauma that the body's suffering over a period of time, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever it is.
Oh, yeah.
So the body's processing all of that for that entire period of time, as opposed to the gash happens and then you're done, so to speak, and it's processed it. These are ongoing because you're leaving the needle in and then playing with them, whatever else, contracting them, compounding them, whatever. It's a different kind of intensity on the body. The body's level of processing and endurance is greatly different. And it is on the top too.
Sensation.
Yeah. Well, I don't get the same fatigue and that kind of fatigue, like that couple of days after. Mm-hmm. I get it too. And as a top, if it's a particularly intense needle scene, because the level of adrenaline I'm using to stay focused, and you don't think about it in the moment, but when you're in that space, your body's processing just like the bottom is, because you're using that like a hunter. You're very much in tune, paying attention, that hyper-awareness. It draws from the body to do that over the course of 30, 40 minutes of precision. It's not the same as the endurance of taking that pain, but it is there, and it absolutely wears on you. I don't get that. Short of like busting a knuckle during an impact scene, I don't have that kind of processing the next couple of days after impact. With needles, I absolutely will.
I think there's, and I think this is why like top drop is so hard for people to explain, because top space in and of itself, you can hit top space in a lot of different ways, just like you do bottom space. But like, I also think it's something unique to neurodivergent and the fact that you can have that singular focus and you can hyper-focus and really drill down to where literally everything else disappears. And there's not a lot of other ways that you can simulate that. And so I think in kink, we hit top space faster with that focus.
Okay.
We maintain it for a long period of time. I mean, the fact that you can have that hyper-focus and keep it for a 45-minute to an hour-long scene, right? That's exhausting. You just ran a marathon in your head. So like it's a lot.
For real.
I think that's where that comes from. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And a lot of the times you start out in that space. You know, I begin my scene in that space from the first poke. I'm locked in, you know.
Exactly. Like the moment I have that first needle in hand, I'm basically in hyper mode. Mm-hmm. Like I can't help it.
Oh yeah.
And
some people even have a routine.
Yeah.
They go through to prep themselves mentally, physically, whatever it may be, whether they want to listen to certain music or this or that, all those things. And that kind of puts us there right from the get-go. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, I may or may not have a playlist for sticking people with Sharpies. So No, that's not what it's called, but I do have one. And it's just because the mental space is so different for me. And knife play is similar in that it's a similar space. It just comes from a different place and it doesn't draw on me the same way. Because I don't need the same kind of hyper intensity. So, and that's why it's worth mentioning, like that come down even for the top, like I spend the next couple of days just a little bit lazier because my body's just not processing the same. It's got that era of fatigue of like, you just worked yourself. And often in that case, if it's an intense enough scene, the bottom usually has the same. So like the next 2 days are checking in on each other. Like, hey, are you okay? Did you shower? Did you eat? Did you remember to take care of yourself? Cause you're not all there.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. The meme game has been on point today.
It really has. Jesus.
Meme and the GIF.
Meme of a GIF. Oh, you're fine. I can't think of anything off topic if anybody wants to add something. I think we covered quite a bit today.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Speaking of on point.
I will say for folks. For folks that haven't done this and they've been contemplating it, I will say this is one of the few things that just walking up to a dungeon and asking somebody to show you something is not sufficient.
Yes. Yes.
It's not even vetting. It's a matter of in other play styles like Impact or CBT or, you know, even rope to a degree. You can walk up to somebody and be like, hey, you just did a really cool thing. Can I talk to you about it? Can you show me that?
Yeah.
And then people will walk away and try to replicate it or emulate it.
God.
This is one of those types of play that you can't do that.
Yeah, don't.
Right.
That's not going to work. If you'd only do it in dungeons every great once in a while, you are not going to be proficient.
No. And it
this
requires
really
proficiency.
A skill.
It is.
It does.
And I think that's...
It's a perishable skill.
It's definitely one of those things worth stressing is that it is a teachable skill, but it is also, it's a perishable skill. You do not, you do not do this by eye and guesswork. Please go do some homework.
No.
Like for real, learn some things, get into something medical, take an anatomy class. Kind of like what I said with the knife play episode, like practice on cuts of beef, things like that. Like do some practice before sticking a person for the first time if no one's introduced you to it by live eye. Like if you haven't actually walked with a mentor on it, do some practice runs on something safe, please. You know, it's worth it.
Practice on yourself.
You can practice on yourself too. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think I poked myself 50, 60 times before I even poked anybody else with a needle. I haven't tried on the tattoo practice skins yet.
You just saw
it. I was just going to say that.
Yeah. I'm not sure how a needle would travel because it's kind of a silicone material. I don't know if it would grab and stick more, you know?
Right.
So I haven't tried that yet.
Yeah.
It might be viable.
So I did that. I actually did that.
Okay.
And I'm responsible, damn it.
I wasn't judging.
So I'm judging me. It's fine. That's I do it for enough for 80 people.
Fair.
But no, like I did that. And the one thing that I noticed with the tattoo skin, I don't feel like it is good for that because there's more drag than you get with actual skin.
Okay.
What I was actually told to use were tomatoes.
Oh, okay.
Because like, obviously if you're too heavy handed, you go too hard, you're going to know pretty quickly. But the skin is so thin that if you can get proficient with a tomato, dealing with some, you know, human skin is going to be a little bit easier for you. And it also teaches you just the steadiness. So like I've been tinkering with that. And I have found that to be, you find out very quickly if your technique is good or not.
Yeah. Tomatoes and then go to yourself and all that.
Because
I feel like anybody who is willing to do this to somebody else should also experience it at some point.
Oh, I completely agree.
I agree.
And it's not like you can't do it without hurting yourself, so to speak. Not literally, but I mean, you can use the back of your wrist for a sample. I don't do that without knowing what you're doing. But again, forearm's a great example too. It takes like one.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But it lets you practice in a safe space.
Yep, mm-hmm. Very much so.
Because again, better to stick yourself than someone else first.
They all feel different. If you kind of know what they feel like individually, you can manipulate the experience based off of that.
Yes.
For example, some needles might feel like that itty bitty little needle that you get at the dentist. What are they called? I'm drawing a blank here. how it's just super, it's a lot of pressure and very stingy. Other ones might be more burning. Cause more of a sensation like that. So you can kind of mix and match those and mold an experience.
Oh, yeah.
So I do want to touch on a comment that's in the chat, because this is really important.
You and I saw it. Yep.
So people interrupting a needle scene with questions, thinking that because it's not something like impact play, that it's okay to try having a chat. A fucking men. So this is actually a big pet peeve of mine in general with dungeon etiquette, because and it's just people not understanding dungeon etiquette. This goes back to that concentration that we were talking about. Like when you even in the frenetic energy of a party and you're like super excited and overstimulated and all the sexy things, when you see somebody's hyper focused on something and paying attention to their partner, regardless if they're in a scene or not, you should not be approaching them.
Right.
Hands down. Like, I don't care. I don't care if they're just sitting on the floor. When you see two people are having a moment, like a shared experience, fucking go near them. Yeah. They're there. I mean, that's why we're all there, right? So why would you want to rain on somebody's parade and like even unintentionally interrupt their space? Like, you don't want to do it. Don't be that guy. Yeah. But with needles specifically, even walking up and casually saying, hey, do you have a minute? You are going to break that bottom's headspace, and there is a huge potential that you have just ended their scene in a hard way.
Yeah.
It's a hard stop. I only know one needle top that really I've watched is in a teaching mindset even while they're playing. And so they don't necessarily welcome conversation, but they will have that kind of glance up and look at you and be like, huh, you like it? and that's really as much as you'll get. And that, to me, is all you should get.
Yeah.
Like, you're not entitled to that person because they're doing something you like. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a negative behavior that we have to try to, like, break out of people. But yeah, like, that is so freaking huge.
Yeah.
You know, and also, just because you see somebody doing something like that doesn't mean that they want to teach you.
Right. Yes.
They're not obligated to show you shit.
Well,
yeah, absolutely.
I say that, I'm saying it crudely on purpose because I hope it sticks with people, but like, you not entitled to other people's knowledge.
Well, and I can even translate that over to the digital side of it. Like, because Mike has been glorious enough to let us watch a couple of scenes he's done with Raya in needle play, streamed in our other server. And, you know, I've had the luxury of catching a couple of those with schedules and all that. And what he'll attest to the fact that I warn people, if you do not mute yourselves and you speak during the scene and you interrupt the scene, you will be server muted for further notice. Like, like,
unless whoever's putting the scene on and, you know, specifically says you can feel free to ask questions, which I think I've also done a couple of those.
Yes, you have.
On the server as well, where, you know, I don't mind questions coming in because I do get into that teaching mindset. I enjoy, you know, sharing the experience with other people and piquing interest. There's a lot of people involved in needles, but I don't feel like the community is as large as it could be, you know.
I agree.
Just because people don't understand or, you know, might not have ever been shown something. And even then, for an experienced top, you know, watching somebody else, you can learn something every once in a while, you know. So,
and that's the beauty of it, is sharing soft skills or skill shares, you know, as it's been affectionately referred to and is long overdue to be resurrected as a thing.
Right.
Like, and that's what it is it's literally just a bunch of tops getting together and showing techniques they use and sharing how they could do differently with each other. And you pick up something from another person, and now your repertoire of what you're doing for that particular thing is expanded. And it's a beautiful thing, because you can talk the safety ramifications. You come up with new ideas together in that space. It's a beautiful thing, and it's long overdue to be around. Like, it's definitely a lost art.
Absolutely.
All right. Final thoughts? Any?
None?
Death threats?
Everything. That was pretty in-depth.
No, I agree with you. I 100% agree. In which case, thank you for those that have joined us right now. As always, everybody joining in the chat, adding their own opinions, questions. We love that shit. That's why we do it. For those that'll listen later, broadcast out into the globe, thank you for listening. That's literally why we're doing this.
We appreciate you so much.
We really do. Every time I see that it's gotten to another place and I've seen more downloads from another country, I just get tickled pink. Because that's exactly what it's for, is bringing that to everybody who don't have it another way. As always, questions, comments, you can reach me through so many channels at this point. You can't be looking if you don't find me. Because you can get me anywhere from Discord to FetLife to wherever. You know, same with the podcast. You can always find me there.
Yeah, same. I mean, I'm on all platforms. I use the same name across platforms to try to make it easier.
So. Exactly. It's funny because I didn't start this particular moniker with that going in, but then the podcast started. I'm like, well, I guess this is who I am now. And I'm okay with that, but it makes it easier, you know, and I want it to be accessible that way, always. I don't get a lot of people that way, but you never know. And I have had people who've reached out via FetLife, through email, through... So having that opportunity matters. So.
I agree. Yeah.
All right. For those listening later, as always, distribution will be in a couple of days. For those that heard the last one, forgive me for sound quality. I feel the need to say something about, we are working on looking
We're
at
trying to fix
an
it.
Impress and upgrade in audio quality for the older ones. Bear in mind, we're amateur. We're working out of pocket here. I'm not an expert by any means. Never going to pretend I am.
Out of pocket.
Simple truth.
I get it.
Right? We're doing what we need to do. It's not about the money. So, literally. But in the meantime, for those of you that are listening, thank you all. Have a wonderful rest of your day.